the fourth chapter, beginning with verse 9. A brief setting for this passage. It is in the Persian Empire. An edict has been issued by the king that all Jewish people are to be exterminated. What the king doesn't know is that Queen Esther is Jewish. And this is, Queen Esther has an uncle, Mordecai, who has sent word to her that this edict has been issued, and he's pressing her to do something about it, to use her position to intervene and see if he can get this stopped. Messenger told Esther what her uncle Mordecai had said, and then Esther sent back this message to her uncle saying, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there's one law, all alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone may that person live. I myself have not been called to come into the king now for 30 days. So the messenger told Mordecai what Esther had said, and Mordecai sent this reply back to Esther. "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. If you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will arise from the Jews from another's quarter, but you and your father's family will perish. Who knows, perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this." And then Esther sent this reply back to Mordecai. "Go and gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, the capital city of Persia, and hold a fast on my behalf. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day, and I and my maids will also fast as you do. And after that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. The book of Esther, it is the only book in the entire Bible that never mentions the name of God. Interesting that we have a book of the Bible that that doesn't mention God. It was written maybe 200 or 300 years before the time of Jesus, before Jesus' birth, but it's a story that is set 500 years before the birth of Jesus in the Persian Empire. At that time, Persia had the largest empire that the Western world had ever seen up to that point in history. The king at the time of the story is Ahasuerus, a man of enormous power and wealth. But Ahasuerus, as we read in the story, it doesn't take us very long to figure out that he doesn't have a clue what to do with his power or his wealth. As to his wealth, he is incredibly wasteful. The opening chapter of the book of Esther tells us that he decided to put on this opulent party for all of the rich men of the kingdom. And the party lasted for 180 days. It was basically an alcoholic binge for 180 days for the wealthy people. After that, he decides that he's going to throw another banquet for the common people. That's only going to last 7 days. But for 7 days, it's an absolute drunken binge, as all the men of the kingdom, both the rich and the poor, get to come to the king's banquet, and they are plastered by the seventh day. During the banquet of the common people, the queen of Persia, a woman by the name of Vashti, decides to throw a banquet for the women. I don't know if it was a minyan, I don't know if they had taco, I don't know what they had, but it was a women's banquet. And so she's holding this banquet, and on the seventh day, back with the men, the king is absolutely pickled, and he has this incredibly stupid idea that he should send for the queen, and she should make an appearance and display herself in the banquet where the men are all drunk. Well, Queen Vashti is a very intelligent woman, although a minimum of intelligence would tell anybody, don't go. And so she doesn't go. The king is livid that his wife has disobeyed his drunken order. And so he decides to call his advisors together and ask them what he should do about his wife. His advisors are very concerned, and their concern mainly has to do with the fact that every wife in the kingdom has now become aware that the queen has disobeyed the king. And so the king's advisors say, this is going to cause trouble for all of us, because when we go home, then none of our wives are going to obey us. They're all going to say, if Queen Vashti doesn't have to obey Ahasuerus, then why should we obey our husbands? So they're very alarmed at how the women are on the verge of just getting out of hand, totally. And they advise the king that he needs to get rid of Queen Vashti and find a new queen who's going to be more passive. Furthermore, they advise him that he should issue an edict that all through the kingdom, wives need to obey their husbands. So he has it written up, and it's sent to all of the provinces of the kingdom, and it's posted in public places. It actually uses the words, the man should be the master of the house. So this issue is sent all the way through the kingdom. It's very clear by the end of chapter 1 of Esther that we are reading an incredible piece of burlesque. It's a story that lampoons people who think that they have the upper hand over others, starting with men who think they have the upper hand over women. And and as we read this, remember, it's written a couple hundred years before Jesus was born, set back in the time of the Persian Empire. It's an incredibly artful piece of literature that we have here in the Old Testament. So we're going to move on. Now, it's going to be more than just a comedy. It's also going to include some tragedy with it as we move on here. But we've started now in the book of Esther with this big problem in the kingdom. How can the men get the wives to be obedient to them? As the book of Esther moves on, Queen Vashti is dismissed, and it's necessary now to search the entire empire to find a new wife for King Ahasuerus. And so the woman who's chosen, her name is Esther. And Esther is a Jewish girl, but she keeps her Jewish identity hidden. This is a little different than, say, the book of Daniel, where Daniel is also living in the Persian court, but because he's openly practicing the rules of the Jewish people, the dietary rules and that sort of thing, and the daily prayers, everybody's aware that Daniel is Jewish, but Esther keeps that identity secret. Her uncle, Mordecai, who lives in the capital city, he also keeps his identity secret, that he's a Jew. So they're what you might say non-practicing Jews, but they're now in the capital city and in positions of power. It's at this point that I need to introduce another character to you. Okay, so we have Ahasuerus the king and his first queen, Vashti, and now his second queen, Esther, who's Jewish, and her uncle, Mordecai, who's a pretty important guy. There's one other person you got to be aware of, and that's a guy by the name of Haman. Haman was a Persian official who, over time, got in really good. He wormed his way in with the king and became second in all of the kingdom in his power. So Haman, the power was just going to his head. He loved being in charge of so many things. And besides, the king was so stupid that it left Haman virtually in charge of everything. I mean, if you're going to be second in control and you've got a guy in control that just lets you do everything because he doesn't know how to handle power. So Haman was a very important guy in the kingdom here. And he expected that everybody in the kingdom should recognize that. And when he walked by, you bowed down in front of him and showed your respect to him. And that's the way everybody in the capital city did. When Haman strutted by, everybody bowed down to him except for Mordecai. Mordecai and Haman kind of went way back, and they were rivals. They were, in fact, mortal enemies of each other. And this disturbed Haman so much because it just ruined his day whenever Mordecai was there, and did everybody else bow down? But it seemed like he couldn't see all the good that was going on. All he could see was that one guy that was disrespectful to him, and it so irritated him that he decided to do some intelligence. He did some spying on Mordecai, and he discovered that Mordecai was Jewish. And what Haman then did, he didn't want to just get rid of Mordecai. He decided that he was going to get rid of Mordecai's people as well. So Haman goes to the king, again, a very stupid man. Haman goes to the king, and he has an order all written out, an edict. And the edict says that on such and such a day, every Jew in the entire empire is going to be exterminated. Man, woman, child, everybody. All the Jews are to die on this particular day. And the king says, "What's this?" And Haman says, "Well, you know, you've got people in your kingdom that don't respect you. They don't really think that you're the king, and you need to get rid of these people because they're going to be a big problem for you." And Ahasuerus signs the edict and says, "Okay, look, you know, take care of it." And so the edict, of course, begins to go out through all of the empire, announcing that the Jews are to be exterminated on such and such a day. Well, of course, there is a great deal of panic all the way through the empire among the Jewish people. And this is where Mordecai, Esther's uncle, sends a message to her. It's the passage that I read to you this morning. He sends her a message and says, you're the only one that's in a position here to do something to get this stopped. And she said, well, you know, she hesitated because she had it pretty good. Her identity was hidden, and she had it better than any other woman in the whole kingdom did. And she at first didn't want to do anything. And Mordecai says, you've got to initiate a meeting with the king here. And she says, you can't just initiate a meeting with the king, because if you show up unannounced, the penalty for showing up unannounced in front of the king is death. It's a death penalty to come when you haven't been summoned. And only the king, by holding out his golden scepter, can pardon you from the death penalty then. And she said, this is pretty dangerous. And that's when Mordecai sends the message back. Perhaps it was just for such a time as this that you've been raised to this royal position. And don't think you're going to be safe just because you have money and you have position in the kingdom here. And then she decides that she's going to do this. And she said, if I perish, I perish. So a beautiful, beautiful piece of literature there in that fourth chapter of Esther. So now it's on Esther. And she very bravely approaches the king, and which is the death penalty, but he pardons her. And he says, he's glad to see her. He says, what can I do for you? And she doesn't come right out and say what it is that she wants. She's going to play this out a little bit here. She says, well, what I would like for you to do for me is I have a dinner prepared for you today, and I'd like you to come to dinner, and I'd like you to bring Haman with you. Well, Haman, when he hears that he's been invited to dine alone with the king and the queen, he's just absolutely delighted with himself here. And so Haman and the king, they go to this dinner that the queen has, and the king is, he's just fawning over Queen Esther, and he says, now, what do you want me to do? I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. What do you want? And she says, well, I just would like you to come tomorrow again for another dinner and bring Haman with you again. He's stringing along here. And so Haman and the king, they finish the dinner and they leave, and Haman is walking on clouds. He's so happy. He and he alone and of everyone in the kingdom has been invited to dine with the king and the queen 2 days in a row now. And as he's walking out of the palace area, What should he see as everybody else is bowing down to him? Doggone Mordecai, standing there, not showing him any respect. And that's all he can see. He forgets all about the great things that have happened to him that day. That's all he can see is that doggone Mordecai standing there. And so he goes home and he starts complaining to his wife about Mordecai. And she says to him, well, you're the second most powerful man in the kingdom. Why don't you just have him executed? You've got people that are in charge of things. Why don't you have them build some gallows and get rid of Mordecai? What's holding you back here? So Haman orders gallows to be built for the hanging, 75 feet high. And he plans to dangle Mordecai from these gallows. Well, the next day, he's got to get to the banquet again because the queen has invited him to dine with her and the king for a second day. And so he's got to hurry off to that. Now, that night, the king couldn't sleep. And he ordered his records, his historical records, to be brought to him. He thought maybe if he could just recount some of the glorious things about his reign as a king that had been written down. And he reads that night about an episode that had happened years earlier where Mordecai had saved his life by uncovering a plot. So the king thinks to himself, I never gave him appropriate reward for thwarting this plot and for saving my life. I need to do something, he's thinking to himself, for Mordecai. So the next day when Haman shows up, the king says to Haman, what do you think should be done for a man that the king wishes to honor? And Haman is thinking to himself, now, that must be me. Who does the king like better than me? Obviously, you know, the king is asking me what I would like here. And so so Haman says to the king, well, I think if the king, what should be done for the man the king wishes to honor is I think that man should be given the king's crown to wear, and the king's robe, and the king's horse. And I think maybe one of the prominent officials of the king should lead that man around the city and proclaim to everybody that this is, in essence, you're to treat this man as though he himself were the king. And so Ahasuerus says, that's a good idea. Remember, Ahasuerus, not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Ahasuerus says, I think that's a wonderful idea. Mordecai is the man I wish to honor, and I think you're just the official to lead him around the city and do this. Well, Haman is, he's having a bad day. He doesn't know it's going to get worse yet, but he's having a bad day, and he doesn't have time to think about that because the banquet is ready. So he and the king, they go into the banquet. The king says to Esther again, what is it you want me to do for you? I'll do anything for you, my love. And Esther says, well, all I really want is for you to save my life and to save the life of my people. The king says, what are you talking about? Save your life. And she says, well, you have a very wicked official who works for you that had you sign an edict several weeks ago saying that all the Jews of your kingdom should be exterminated on such and such a day. I'm Jewish. And my family is Jewish and my people are Jewish. You have let an official talk you into exterminating me and all of my people. And the king says, what terrible rascal would have forced me to do that? And Esther says, Haman is the one who brought you that edict. And the king is outraged. And so he's so angry, he stalks out of the room. Haman, meanwhile, is in a panic. He realizes his only hope is to throw himself on the mercy of Queen Esther. And he literally throws himself upon her. She's on a couch, which is, they were reclining as they were eating, and he throws himself upon her. And as he's hugging her, begging for mercy, the king, of course, walks back in the room and sees Haman on top of his wife. And immediately, the king says, this man has got to be executed. How can we do this? And another official says, well, you know, it just so happens that Haman has just built some gallows 70 feet high right outside his own house. Why don't we hang him on that? And so immediately Haman is taken off and he's hung. Mordecai, meanwhile, goes to the king and he says, we've still got a problem because once you issue a rule, it can't be revoked. So Mordecai says, I suggest that we arm all the Jewish people of the empire. We give them all weapons and we tell them on such and such a day, they should slaughter anybody who doesn't like them. And so all the Jewish people of the kingdom are armed, and at the edict of the king, they are permitted to slaughter anyone who doesn't like them. Now, Haman has already been hung. It's decided that they will also hang all of Haman's family, even though the Bible expressly forbids that children should pay the penalty for their parents. And on the day when the Jews were to be slaughtered, the Jews instead slaughter 75,000 people throughout the empire that they consider to be their enemies and their opposition. And so it is that the book of Esther then ends. The bad news, the good news, and the practical applications of the book of Esther. Well, it's always bad news when we mix stupidity and power. King Ahasuerus, Haman, there's a certain stupidity that runs through these people that had power. And it's never a good thing when stupidity and power come together. I don't need to say anything more about that. We have plenty of everyday modern examples of that. It's bad news when somebody thinks that they are superior to other people because of some accident or peculiarity of birth. And we can see that it begins in the home. It begins with what happens in almost every culture in history, where somehow the men, the males, believe that they have superiority, which then would follow that the females or the women should obey them. The man is the head of the house. That's bad news if you think you're better than somebody because you're a man. We can see that played out whenever men have some sense of entitlement. And that's what's lampooned in the book of Esther, is men who think they're entitled to some special power just because they're men. The husband just because he's the husband instead of the wife. We can see it played out in our own day when it doesn't just stop with a sense of entitlement because I'm a man or because I'm the husband. We can see it played out whenever there are efforts to be controlling and efforts to dominate. And most of the situations of domestic abuse, both psychological and physical, are men who are acting out of that sense of entitlement and control and domination. That's the bad news that we see in Esther. And it's lampooned, it's presented in a comedic form in the first chapter of Esther, but it's bad news. And we also see that that extends to other areas of life where a person may feel himself or herself to be superior to others. And it leads to a sense of entitlement, and it leads to a sense of control, and to actions of control and of dominance. We can see it when somebody who thinks, because I'm white, I'm superior to somebody whose skin isn't white. Or because I have money, I'm superior to those who don't. Or because I have an education, I'm superior to those who don't. Or because I'm American, I'm superior to those people who aren't American. Or because I'm a Christian, I'm superior to those people who aren't Christian. And it goes on and on and on, that sense of superiority, which we see so evident in the book of Esther, that sense of superiority that leads to a sense of entitlement. And that it leads to things where one person or one group of people are controlling another, and it leads to a sense of domination. And we can see what happens by the end of the book of Esther. It leads to violence and it leads to death. But it starts in the book of Esther with that sense of superiority. That's the bad news of Esther. The good news of Esther is that there are people who don't sit back and just let that happen. The good news of Esther comes in a queen, Vashti, or in the early part of the book, Mordecai, before he himself decides to control others with a sense of Jewish superiority. We can see it with Queen Esther, who's willing to break the rules and subvert the system in order to try to save her people. And that's the good news of Esther. The good news is people who can step back from a situation and write a burlesque or write a parody of what's going on to help people see that in a way that's maybe easier to see if it can be a burlesque rather than if it's just a sort of a grim attack against this sort of evil. So the book has both good and bad in it. And as for the practical things, I just very quickly leave with this. The book reminds us that sometimes we have to change the people that are in charge because it's gotten to their heads. The book also reminds us that sometimes it's not enough to just change the people who are in charge. Sometimes we have to change the rules. One of the things that is striking as you read through the book of Esther is that all the stupid rules that people are following. The rule that if you come into the presence of the king without being invited first, that you're going to be executed. The rule that once a king issues an edict, that it can't be undone. Even the king can't change that. I mean, there are all sorts of rules that are going on in the book of Esther. And one of the things that is important for us is we realize sometimes it's not the people that are in charge of things. Sometimes it's the rules that we're all living by that have put us into the mess that we're in. And sometimes the rules need to be changed. And then finally, sometimes the spirit needs to be changed. One of the sad things that happens in the book of Esther is that Mordecai ends up with that same vengeful, violent, hostile spirit at the end of the book as Haman had at the beginning of the book. And if you don't change the spirit that's out there, if you don't change the spirit that's in here, then we're going to continue to suffer and struggle with the way things are. So the practical advice of Esther, sometimes you've got to change who's in charge. Sometimes you've got to change the rules. Almost always, we have to change the spirit if we want our lives to get better. And so it is that we have the book of Esther. There are five books of the Old Testament that I think are among the most fascinating because they give us a whole different way of looking at life than the way things normally are. The book of Esther is one of those. It's just a very radically different way to see things. Ruth is another one. Job will do that. That'll be the next book I speak on. Jonah is that way. The book of Ecclesiastes is that way. So as we get to, we've done Ruth and Esther now. As we get to these others, we'll continue to enjoy the ways that they invite us to see life and the world from a very different perspective.